I wore my lucky tie today. Right, you see that? The Vikings have never lost when I've worn this tie. I've never worn this tie. I've had this tie for 15 years and I've never worn it. I thought, you know, why not today? You know, seemed reasonable. So here I am. So we'll find out at the end of today whether this in fact was my lucky tie or this tie will never be worn again. Okay. So did anyone here, did the Vikings win last week? Yeah, right, you know, huh? But it caused me to wonder a few things. You know, that was fun. That was special. And even with families and things like that, you watch it and you've created these memories. And so you value these times. And it caused me to kind of reflect and wonder, what is it that we really value, you know, in the depth of it? And let's look at it, because I think a lot of us here today, we're kind of getting amped up. We're getting ready for what's going to take place this evening. And we will value, let's be honest, gut level honest, we will value a Vikings victory. Right, Mike? That's right, I knew it. I've heard rumor that there's some in this room that are not wanting the Vikings to win the Super Bowl, and I just don't understand that. Now, most of us in this room are expecting the Vikings will not win the Super Bowl, let's be honest, because we've been through that so many times, we prepare ourselves. I was doing it last week. I was so ready for the loss, okay? I was talking myself down, if you will, through the whole game. It's like, well, it's only 17-0. Well, Don't count your chickens before they hatch right now. We've been through this before. And sure enough, we lost the lead. And I'm telling Isaac, it's just a game. I'm telling more to myself than anyone else. It's just a game. And then they pull it off. So I knew they could do it the whole time. But there's this intrinsic value that somehow it has generated. And we place it on the sports team. But there's other things in our lives that we value. And so I wanted to give, as we get started, I want to give some perspective on value. And so as we do this, and it's going to tie in well with where we're going at so far, so here's a quote. It says, priceless. Okay, that priceless moment when your friends are being scolded by their parents and all you could do is sit in silence and look at your phone. Priceless. Pretending not to notice. Remember these Visa commercials? Remember these? So it was a box of chocolates, $10, flowers, $20, dinner and a movie, $40, Valentine's Day is right around the corner. And it says, keeping your $70 on Valentine's Day because you're single. Priceless. We waste a lot of money on Valentine's Day. And that's not waste. We've never, that was the wrong word. That was the wrong word. I did not mean that word. Did not mean that word at all. There's one person I know, and I'm not going to say who it is. There's one person I know that for years kept giving the exact same Valentine card. They would give it, they would collect it, put it in a drawer, and then give the same card the following year. I don't know if he ever caught on. F-18, Hornet, attack fighter, $50 million. Combat school, $1 million. That's quite the school. Sidewinder missile, $250,000. Pushing the wrong button at startup, that would be priceless. See, that's the missile. That was the wrong start button. You're not rich until you have something that money can't buy. Have you thought about that? It's interesting, isn't it? And that kind of goes with where we're going to be heading today. And then this one, finding friends that have the same mental disorder as you, by all means, priceless. So there was a few years ago, this is actually quite a few years ago, my mom was ready to take this vase that she had and get rid of it. I don't remember. She might have been throwing it away. She might have been giving it to Goodwill, whatever the case is. And her mother, who was an antique dealer, said, no, wait, don't do that. That's a special vase. I don't remember. Is it Roseville pottery comes to mind? Anyway, and so this is a picture of it. And this vase, my mom was ready to pitch it. And then she found out suddenly this vase was worth like $350. You know, it's just like, wow, what I thought was worthless suddenly has this value. So my mom has kept it. When she gives it to one of us, we'll probably throw it. Just saying, because I don't think it looks that nice. It's reality. But it's interesting then what we put our value on. If you offered my mom $500 for that vase, she'd probably take it, you know, because it's not worth that. If someone offered you $500 for your children, you'd probably take it. No, you wouldn't do that. I would never do that. Never, ever. I have an old antique anchor winch. It's designed, it's really classy. You put it on the side of your boat, and you clamp it to the side of your boat, and it's got this winch up on top, and it raises and lowers your anchor. I've never seen anything like it anywhere. And would I sell it? I'm not really interested in selling it, you know? And maybe if someone offered me a lot of money, but the reality is there's sentimental peace to some of these things because this one belonged to my grandfather. We end up holding on to these things. And so there's something more than just money is what I'm getting at that gives us some sense of value. You know, there's got to be something deeper that kind of pushes the value of something to be a little bit higher. So last week and the weeks leading up, we've been talking, going through the Gospel of John, and we encountered Jesus at this moment a few weeks ago where he sees this tomb, and there's this stone in front of this tomb, and inside this tomb is this dead man, Lazarus, who's been dead for 4 days. And he calls to the people, says, remove the stone. And they say, what are you, nuts? That's going to reek by now. And he says, do it anyway. And then he calls Lazarus forth, and here comes Lazarus out of the grave, a man who had been dead for 4 days, calls him out. Jesus says, I am the resurrection. I am the life. All right, which is more than I give resurrection and I give life. He says, I am the sustainer. I am the creator. I am the very essence of those things. And he calls Lazarus out and says, take off the grave clothes because that which I have made alive is no longer dead. Take him off because he's going to live a life that is alive now. And we don't want any resemblance of the death to continue. And so because of these things, what we found then last week is we had these people. Many of the Jews, it said, saw what Jesus had done in raising this man from the dead, and it says that they saw that evidence and they believed in Jesus. But yet we also saw that there was others who, despite the fact that they saw this evidence that Jesus had just raised the man from the dead, they went to the Pharisees and they went and tattled, if you will, to the Pharisees and said, guess what, this Jesus guy, he's raising people from the dead now. And the Pharisees brought in the Sadducees, which is another political religious organization, and together they made the 70, which was the Sanhedrin. I know it's complicated, but there was this religious ruling council is what it was. And the Sadducees said, there is no resurrection. So when they hear this word that Jesus had just raised someone from the dead, they're saying, that's not possible. That doesn't fit with our belief. We have to continue with believing what we've always believed, even if the evidence suggests otherwise. Does that make sense? And so they said, that can't be the case. And so they said, we got to get rid of this Jesus. Don't you see? And this is Caiaphas stepped in last week. And he says, don't you get this reality that we have? It's just a no-brainer. We need to get rid of the guy that is causing the trouble for us. It's better for one man to die than for the whole nation to perish. And so we have Caiaphas step in that role. And then everyone is trying to pursue the killing of Jesus. That he cannot be who he says he is. And all the way through, from the beginning of the Gospel of John till now, we've seen this pattern where Jesus is really trying to draw people to himself. You remember back in chapter 10, he says, I am the good shepherd. And he says, I have these sheep. And these sheep know my voice, and I know them, and they come into the sheepfold. But he said also then that there are others who are not my sheep. And then we find in sections of the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Mark how Jesus actually refers to some of these others as wolves. And in one spot, even in Acts chapter 20, he says, after I'm gone, Jesus tells us to his people, after I'm gone, you know what's going to happen? It's all these wolves are going to come in and try to steal out the sheep and deceive them and get them into believing the lies. And we find that even way back in chapter 6 of the Gospel of John, Jesus has been trying to get people to understand, I am who I say I am, and the whole goal is that you will follow me. And in John chapter 6, if you remember, that was the moment where he had fed 5,000 people. He goes down by the shore, and all of these people are following him. And Jesus turns to them and says, don't you get it? He says, if you really want to follow me, you need to learn to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And all kinds of them said, I don't think so. That's really gross. And they left him. But even at that moment, Jesus wants them to follow him. He wants them to understand who he really is. He's not just a giver of food. He's a giver of life. He is life itself. And he doesn't want them to see a small picture of who he is. He wants them to see the whole picture of who he is. And so even in that midst of what it looks like he's pushing people away, he's trying to present this reality of him being who he really is. And so then last week as we left it, he went off. The Jews are trying to capture him. They're trying to kill him. He goes off into Ephraim. Okay, he goes away from that region, that area of Jerusalem. And that's where we pick up the story here today in John chapter 12. The Passover is getting close, all right? The Passover is that feast, that celebration. We've seen it several times through the Gospel of John, but it's that celebration where the Jews come together all throughout Israel. They come together in Jerusalem, this huge crowd, and they're there to celebrate this memory, this remembering of what God had done for them and taking the people out of Egypt, okay, hundreds of years before. And so they're there to celebrate it. And so is this where we're at? 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany. It's interesting. You'll find this account of Jesus and what's happening here with Jesus being anointed. You find this account in also the Gospels of Matthew and Mark. But just a little point of interest. Mark will refer to it as being 2 days. This is not contrary. I just want to give a little highlight because some of you may ask that later. So this one says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus had lived. The Mark passage says 2 days before, but Mark's design is a little bit different. I know it's getting a little bit complicated, but for those who are interested, this is how it works with Mark. Mark basically is telling this story of when Judas turned Jesus over to the chief priests. In other words, when he sold him, when he betrayed him. And that happened 2 days before the Passover. And so what Mark does in his layout, he says 2 days before the Passover, that's when Judas does this. And then he sandwiches this story in the midst of the story about Jesus being anointed and then continues the story down here. It makes sense when you kind of have that mental picture of it. So they're not contrary to each other, just a little side point. So here we are, 6 days before the Passover. The Passover is coming. And at this time, we saw last week, people were already migrating into Jerusalem to ceremonially wash themselves to be ready for this celebration. And people last week were asking, is Jesus even going to come, do you think, to the celebration? Because they knew that if Jesus came, all the chief priests wanted to arrest him and kill him. They made it plain as day. In fact, they asked people, if you see him, come and tell us, we want to get rid of him. So here we find Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, he goes back to Bethany. Bethany is that town where he raised Lazarus up from the grave. Whom Jesus had raised from the dead. I just said that. Okay, and you look at the Mark and Matthew passage, both refer to this house. This is not Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' house. This is the house of Simon the leper. Same town, Bethany, where Lazarus lived, but it's not the same house. Different house. Simon the leper was also believed to be someone that Jesus had healed. And so we have this group of people who Jesus has touched in their lives in different ways. Lazarus was dead. He's now alive. Mary and Martha were there to see it. The disciples have all been around him. And we have Simon the leper, as referred to in the Gospels of Matthew and Mark, who also had been healed. And who knows who else? It's very possible that we would have others that we read about in the scriptures. It's very possible that that blind man born from birth could have been there. We don't know that. I don't want to speculate overly that he was, but it's possible that all of these people that Jesus had interacted with were there. So here we have, a dinner was being given in Jesus' honor. We don't really know why, except for the fact that they know that there's great persecution and pressure coming right now to get Jesus out of the picture. That is no secret. It is no secret that the Jewish leaders want to arrest Jesus. It is no secret that the Jewish leaders want to kill Jesus. So here a dinner is being given in Jesus' honor. Martha served. That's important. We're going to come back to that in a little bit later, provided I remember. And then it says, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table. So here you have the picture. Jesus is reclining at the table. Lazarus, this dead man who's now there, reclining at the table. He's actually reclining alive, not reclining dead. That would be a big difference. And then we have, in verse 3, it says, then Mary, remember we have Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. All of them are mentioned here. And if you remember back in Luke chapter 10, we've talked about that a number of times over these past weeks. That's when Martha was busy, and Mary was just sitting at Jesus' feet, and Martha says, Jesus, tell my sister Mary to do something to help me. And Jesus says, Martha, you're kind of missing the point here. Keep that in your mind. So then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet, and she wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. This is huge. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of finish going through this passage, and then we're going to come back and we're going to kind of talk about it. So this sermon will take twice as long as usual. Just, you know. Some are nervous chuckles. But one of the disciples, and John is the only one that actually specifies which of these disciples, and John makes a huge point of that. The other gospel accounts of this one will refer to the disciples. So the disciples, likewise, not just Judas, looked at what this Mary did, and it's like, have you just lost your mind? There's this moment of, you're an idiot. Why would you do that? All of them. And so, but John points out to Judas, and he says, but one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. And he said, why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. This perfume, when you compare it to where we're at today, would be valued in today's economy somewhere in the range of $10,000 to $30,000. $10,000, not $10. $10,000 to $30,000. This vial of perfume that this Mary pours out in our equivalent economy would be worth somewhere in the range of $10,000 to $30,000. There it is. Gone. Judas did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and as keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. So it's interesting, as they would approach the Passover, it was very customary that offerings actually would be taken and received and then given to the poor. And so what Judas is getting at here, he's kind of playing out this idea of, wait a minute, we're supposed to give something to the poor. If that had been sold, we'd been able to give it to the poor. We'd probably still have some then. And it's like, but yet Judas cared less about the poor because John points out that Judas was a thief. And it's all likelihood, they may not have known it at this time, but John, obviously, who went through this and wrote this gospel after that fact, would have realized after Judas was gone, it's like, wait a minute, where'd this money go? Where did this money go? And he became to realize, like, Judas has been, he's been peeling off of our fund. And John 12:7 says this, Jesus replies, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. Mark and Matthew refer to it as basically what she has done is preparing my body for burial. And both are accurate statements. It's very likely, and consider this, Lazarus was dead just a short time ago. And Mary did not use this perfume on Lazarus. And if we remember the sequence right, we already knew even at that time that there was a threat on Jesus' life. And so already I see Mary has had this perfume. She didn't just go out and buy it. She's had it. What is she going to use it for? Her own brother dies, and yet she sees that there's something more useful to use this for than even her own brother. There's something greater, something of more value to take this expensive perfume for. Maybe even at that time she doesn't know what it is, but all of a sudden we're going to see it come forth here today. But Jesus says, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. In other words, she probably was planning, when I die, because the threats of my life are real, the threat of my arrest is real, it was probably planned in Mary's mind that when Jesus dies, which could be any time now, I'm going to use this for him. We'll come back to that in a little bit here as well. And then John chapter 12, verse 8 says this, Jesus replies to his disciples, and he says, you will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. And this kind of appears to be this selfish statement, but this actually resonates with the disciples, because let's look here in Deuteronomy 15. This is way back in the law of Moses. All right, this is kind of the instructions that God had given to the Israelites, to those who were poor around them. This is what it says in verse 7. If anyone is poor among you, your fellow Israelites, in any of the towns of the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward them. So in other words, you got these poor people. Don't hold your money like this. Give it, and give it freely. It goes on in verse 10, same chapter. It says, give generously to them, and do so without a grudging heart. Then because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything you put your hand to. Now there's one more verse. Look at this. There will always be poor people in the land. You know, so just to clarify, just so you understand, what Jesus isn't saying is, he's not saying don't give to the poor. But he is saying there's something bigger going on here than just selling this money, or selling this for money and giving the money to the poor. This is reflection back to Deuteronomy and what God has said to the people. Listen, I always want you to give to the poor. Okay, it's not just at Passover, not just because that's our tradition right now, but there's a bigger thing going on here. It says, there will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your fellow Israelites who are poor and needy in your land. And let's finish up here. We've got 9 through 11, and then we're going to go kind of flip back, and we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about what we're looking at. So meanwhile, after Jesus had said these things, meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came, not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus. So here's the story. Here's this dead man who is now alive. They're at this banquet. Jesus is there, who had already gained this reputation. And so people are coming to see Jesus, but not only that, they wanted to see face to face. They wanted to see this Lazarus who was dead and is now alive. Is his skin falling off? I mean, does he have rotting flesh? I mean, what does he really look like? They wanted to see. He's a celebrity. He's an overnight celebrity, and everyone wants to see, like, this Lazarus. Who is this Jesus that raised this guy? And I want to see this Lazarus for my very own eyes to see how he lives and what he looks like. I'd like to even touch him. I'd like to talk with him and see what was it like. You know, you can't help but think, you know, with Lazarus, you know, we believe that to be apart from the body is to be present with the Lord. And so when Lazarus was dead for 4 days and Jesus called him back, suddenly did he go from the presence of the Lord back to earth? It's like, Jesus, seriously, that was really not nice. Because I was in glory, I was with the Lord, and then you called me back to this, you know. And now the threats are going to, we'll see it next week, the threats are going to be on Lazarus' life now. It's like, okay, you called me back from that just so I can get brutally killed. Appreciate that. Really, really nice of you. But Jesus has something way bigger going on here. So he says, meanwhile, a large crowd were following not only to see Jesus, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. Verse 10 and then 11. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well. Thanks, Jesus. For on account of him, many of the Jews, he is the evidence, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing him. Because of this remarkable thing, many were coming, and that's exactly what Jesus is after. So we have this story, and we look at Lazarus. This very fact that he is there, he's in this room, he's with Jesus. And I want you to understand, people are coming to not only see Jesus, they're coming to see Lazarus. And this points us to this reality. Lazarus' life, his very existence, demands an explanation. You know what I mean? He's sitting there, he's alive, at the table, he's eating, and everyone that comes in and sees Jesus and they see Lazarus there, Lazarus is here, he was dead, he's now alive, and that demands, I want to hear what happened. That doesn't just happen. Give me the explanation of what has just happened. Lazarus' very life demands an explanation. And likewise, I'm convinced, and this is where we're going to go with it a little bit today, I am convinced that when we give our lives to Jesus, and he does that heart-transforming work in us, our lives should look in such a way that it demands an explanation. Where someone sees how we live, and then someone sees how we love, and someone sees how we care, and it demands, what's the deal with you? And we'll see that a little bit more this morning as well. So here's the story. And I want us to be thinking about, you know, here at Alliance Church, we emphasize three core points. We look at the idea of worship. We look at the truth of connecting and of serving. And we think that they're really core to what a follower of Christ really, and what it encompasses them. And we're going to see that evidenced this morning as we look through this story. Because I think that as we look at the changed heart, when our heart is changed, we can't help but fall into this realm of worship and of connect and of serve. And in order to have a life that demands an explanation, we have to have that changed heart first and foremost. So let's talk about Martha briefly here first. You remember back in Luke 10, Martha was serving and she was reprimanded after she had, in a sense, reprimanded Mary. So Martha's there serving, she's a busybody, and she goes to Jesus and says, Jesus, Mary's not helping me, tell my sister to help me. And Jesus says, Martha, you're misunderstanding, there's a bigger message going on. But yet what we see here in John chapter 12, Martha's behavior really hasn't changed. You know, maybe what she's saying is a little bit, but she's still serving, she's still doing what she was doing before. At heart, Martha is a server. At heart, that's what Martha's good at. That's what Martha gets. That's what drives Martha. And now what we see in this passage, there is no reprimand. And I'm convinced that the reason that there's no reprimand is the fact that Martha has a totally changed heart, a totally different attitude by what she's doing, and she's doing, in a sense, the same thing. And that Luke 10 passage, she was serving the people, everyone there for the meal. And she's all uptight about Mary not helping her. This time, she's doing the same thing. All these people are here. She's serving the meal. But something has caused her heart to be different. And I'm convinced that what she's seeing right now is this opportunity. I am serving Jesus because that's what I can do. I am serving Jesus. He deserves more than what I'm doing. He deserves me to do more. And this is all I can think of to do, and that's to serve. And so I will serve. You know, that's just a brief spot, and I don't want to overthink and put some of these things on her, but I see that there's evidence, strong evidence that suggests she's not doing something different. She's doing the same thing, and it's because of a different heart that she's doing it. And that points again to this idea of a new heart is what drives us into worship. It's a new heart that drives us into connecting, and it's a new heart that drives us into serving. And then we look at this passage and we see the people that are there, and we bring in the Matthew and the Mark account, and we have Simon the leper, we have Lazarus there, we have the disciples there, we have Jesus there, and then we have many other Jews coming in there. There's this beautiful picture of connecting. And it says that as people came in and they saw Jesus, and as people came in and they're discussing with each other, and as people came in and they saw Lazarus, it said, the scripture said, many more people chose to believe. Because they had a changed heart, they would come in and they would connect with each other. They had a longing to connect with each other. Many different forms, many different kinds of people, many different interests, and yet they came together and had the common bond of Jesus Christ. And when we can have a changed heart, even our enemies who also have the common bond of Jesus Christ, and we have the common bond of Jesus Christ, we can find this commonality and we can connect in love with each other, and that is a beautiful thing. And I don't think we see that outside of the church very often. Somewhat, I think we see it when we look at our sports. Because you have many people who are probably Vikings fans, and if it weren't for the Minnesota Vikings, a lot of Minnesota Vikings fans may have nothing else in common. You follow what I'm saying there? You know, in every average day, they may not normally connect with each other, but they have that common peace, and they have that, they can go to the game together, and they can actually rally around the game and say, yes, we have this common bond, go Vikings. Well, the likewise, and even a better commonality, is this, we have Christ in common. So even if we have disagreements with each other, even if we have conflict with each other, we still have that common bond of Jesus Christ that we can fall back on and say, all right, I don't agree with you, but we got Jesus. And we can move on that. And so I see that in this picture. And again, I don't want to read too much into what it is that we've looked at. But the biggest thing, and this just blows my mind, is what we see happen with Mary. So you have this scene. They're at Simon the leper's house. Simon has likely been healed by Jesus. Apparently, the whole leper, it's like one of those nicknames that you kind of wish didn't stick in middle school. That's what I see. You know, Simon the leper is no longer Simon the former leper, just didn't have the same ring, so they call him Simon the leper still, despite the fact that perhaps he's been healed. But you have this image, you have there at his house, you got Lazarus, you've got Jesus, you've got all these people, you got Martha, she's there, she's serving. And in the midst of all of this passion, here comes Mary. And she comes walking in, what it says, with this pint of pure nard, which would be about twice the size of what I've got here. And this nard was a plant. It was a very aromatic plant. All right? And people, what she does, she takes and she breaks it open. This has a cork in it. She takes and she actually breaks it. It was sealed off, ready for those one-time use and one-time use only. And she takes it and she's going to anoint Jesus. And it's interesting, that was not uncommon. When you're a person of honor and you go into someone's home, it was not uncommon that they would anoint you. We even see evidence of it when we look at Psalm 23 and how God anoints our heads with oil. Remember how it verbalizes that? It was not uncommon that you would pour on oil as a place of honor, esteeming that person. You know, and that oil then would be poured on their head and it would run down. We see it in Mark and Matthew accounts that it said that Mary, it doesn't use her name, but anointed Jesus on the head. You know, he refers in one spot there, he said, well, it was my body, but in what we see here is the feet. And the truth of it is, it's probably the whole body. With a whole pint of it, she probably had plenty to go ahead and just, and as he's reclining, he would have been sitting on his left elbow, feet extended out behind him, and eat with his right hand, and so his feet would have been, it's just not like she's crawling under the table to anoint his feet, okay? So she's pouring it, in a sense, as he's reclining there, and just pours this perfume over the top of him. So she comes, and I just see this moment. She's been saving this perfume for such a special occasion. She's, I believe, thinking along the lines of, when Jesus is killed, I'm going to use that perfume. And she just, what I see is she can't contain herself any longer. Jesus has been so much to her. She finds herself so passionate in love. I think she has a knee-jerk reaction, and she takes and she breaks the bottle open, and then she takes and she pours it out over Jesus, all of it. $10,000, $30,000, gone. What would your life look like if you suddenly spent $10,000 to $30,000 without talking to your spouse maybe first? You know, maybe because Martha and Mary and Lazarus lived together, it's like, could you think Martha and Lazarus going, okay, Mary, maybe you should have run that by us first. Okay. We didn't see that one coming. But I don't think that really exists there. What we have is we have Mary in this passionate moment of worship. She sees Jesus. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to react. I was saving this for your burial, but I want you to know now how passionately I am in love with you and how passionately I am for what you have done for me. She breaks the bottle and she pours it on him right then and there. You are worth $30,000. And if I had two of them, I would have dumped them on you. You know, she doesn't give Jesus everything she has. They still have their house. But I'm pretty convinced that if Jesus had said, Mary, I'd like you to give me your house, I think Mary would have said, okay, Jesus, you can have my house too. I think at that moment when she is so full of what Jesus has done for her, she can't help but express it in any way she can. And this is a total and devout act of worship and nothing else. And notice there was no singing involved in this act of worship. And don't get me wrong, I like singing. Most people don't like my singing. At least that's what they tell me. Okay, but there is this truth to it, though. We have taken this idea of worship and we've attributed it only with song, but there's so much more involved in worship than just song. Because Mary, we have maybe no better picture of what worship is than what Mary does for Jesus at that moment where she breaks and says, Jesus, you're worth it. And that's the root of worship right there. Worth it. You can't tell me, let's be honest, okay? And we're not going to call for hands and such because I'm guilty of this. I'll just throw that over first and foremost. This week, and we're talking a lot about the Vikings. It's my tie, isn't it? That's what does it. We're talking about the Vikings this week. Okay, you can't tell me that we haven't, at some capacity, raised Case Keenum and Stefan Diggs to this, like, superhuman almost level. Can you believe what they did? That was so great. You know? And in a sense, we have raised them up and we have esteemed them so highly. We have credited them so highly. They are worth the Vikings franchise. They're so, and it's, you can't deny it. It was fun. But it's a form of worship in a sense. We need to be very careful about that. But my bigger point is kind of this. As great as that was, and it was good, and as fun as that was, and it was fun, it's still a game. Just like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to talk myself down. It's just a game. It doesn't feel like a game. It is just a game. And today, just preparing you. Okay, I've been through it. I don't know how many times already. It's just a game. Jesus is not just a game. And that's the bigger picture here. I just don't want you to miss it. He is worth all of your worship. He is worth so much more than $30,000. You know what I mean? And the contrast, and this is just a fascinating contrast. Judas, who we just talked about here a little bit, Judas goes and betrays Jesus for what's known as 30 pieces of silver. Here's Mary. She's poured out $30,000. It is difficult on all of these, when you're taking that currency of the New Testament and you're taking our currency now, you try to fit some numbers in it to get an idea. But the equivalent from what you find is some most people will say that the ballpark figure, what Judas betrayed Jesus for, was somewhere between $300 and $1,000. She gives 30. Judas takes $300,000 and turns him over. Who's worshiping what? It's obvious that Mary is not worshiping money. It's obvious that Mary's not worshiping her stuff. It's obvious that Judas is worshiping money. So, what do we do with this? I think Mary's life demanded an explanation. When she poured out that perfume, I think people's like, what's wrong with you? Explain that to me, why you just decided to waste that. And I think Mary's response would have been, I don't know. I don't know why I did it, but I'll tell you this, it was worth every drop. You know what I mean? I don't think Mary could articulate why did you do that, except for the fact of he was worth doing it for. Now, don't get me wrong, because I've got to be a little bit vulnerable here. Dollar store. I couldn't bring myself to go and buy an expensive perfume. When I say expensive, I'm talking like Walmart expensive, okay? I couldn't even go there, all right? And so I'm not where Mary's at, let's just be honest, because it's like I look at that, it's like, well, that's just wasteful. But there's something going on there, and Jesus affirms her and says, don't you dare. And then this is the beautiful part. In the gospel accounts that we read here, Jesus says in response to this, he says, this story is going to be told whenever the gospel is shared. The story of what this woman has done, that's what he says in Matthew and the Mark account. This story of what Mary has just done for me is going to be shared whenever people talk about the gospel. You want to know why? Because what she did demands an explanation. And the only explanation I can come up with is, he's worth it. Worship is defined as this regard with great or extravagant respect, honor, and devotion. And I'll tell you this, Jesus is worth all of our worship. There came a point when Mary suddenly it clicked and she got it. And she said, my heart is different and I will pour it out. I will give it to him because her heart has changed. We saw it changed in Martha. We saw it changed in Lazarus. We saw it changed in everyone else around them. It's not about behavior. It's about heart change. You know, and we look at that when our hearts have changed, it leads us to want to connect with God. It leads us to want to connect with Jesus. It leads us to want to connect with other people. When our hearts are changed, we find that we yearn and desire to serve. You know, and some of us look at it, it's like, well, I am serving, which I know we are. You guys are fabulous at that. But there's some of us like, I don't know how to serve. I don't know what that even looks like. Well, take some time and think about what are you good at? What do you like to do? Do you like to cook? We have some fabulous people in this church. They're serving by cooking. There's great opportunities to serve by cooking. I can help you with that. Okay? Because we have people that come in every Wednesday night, and what they do is they cook a meal for our Wednesday night ministry workers. What a cool way to serve. You know? If you can cook, there's a way you can serve. You know, if you're good at building, there's ways that you can serve. If you're good at teaching, if you can change diapers, this is what's fascinating. Well, think about this, because sometimes we look at this, well, that's not really serving, but it is so deep and it's such a rich way to serving. Because look at this, if you, by changing a baby's diaper, you're providing an opportunity for someone else to perhaps be in here to hear this message that the Lord maybe has for them. Do you follow that? You know? And it's all important. All of it. And so I just want to challenge you as you take some time and you look at, okay, I want to worship Lord. Lord, I want you to do that heart change in me so that I'm ready to pour out whatever it is I have on you, whether it's money, whether it's just pouring out my time to connect with people, whether it's pouring out my abilities for service. I just help me to worship you through all of that. So I'm going to invite Kevin and the worship team to come up. I want us to reflect on that as we worship. And we're going to use song to worship, but worship is so much more than song.